¿Quieres pedo, güey? No, chale. Chale,
chale, chale. ¿Quieres pedo? No, chale. Chale. Ya sabes que a mí me vale.
Me vale.
¿Quieres pedo? No, chale.
Chale.
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in today to the podcast. I hope your day is going as good as mine because I'm sitting here in beautiful Southern California. I'm looking out the window right now and it's such a gorgeous day. Life's pretty good. So if you guys know me, you know that I enjoy some of the finer things in life, which would be a good beer on a hot day, a nice cigar at night by the fire pit, some nice food and some good company. Well, today's guest is he enjoys all the same stuff as I do. When I first met him, it was actually through a mutual friend, Alberto Del Rio, when Alberto was the president of Combate Americas, the MMA organization. So we had dinner, and as soon as I hooked up with this dude, yeah, I knew right away that we were cut from the same cloth. Definitely the same likes, grew up very much the same background, same culture, and he enjoys the nicer things also. So today we got MMA referee Mike Beltran. Now you might know Mike, he's the referee with that big old long mustache that comes all the way down to like his stomach, but that's the dude that that got on today, man. Really, really good dude. A guy that grew up in the barrio. He grew up tough, man. And a lot of his homies went one route. They ended up doing the gang route. And he ended up enlisting in the Marines and then becoming an LA County Sheriff. So you got this guy who, his friends went one way and he went the other way. And then started doing jiu-jitsu and became, I believe he's a brown belt now. And which is right under black belt, and now he's also on TV as one of the leading referees in MMA. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, which I think you will, but let me present to you MMA referee Mike Beltran.
All right, man. Mike, what's going on, brother?
Right here, brother, man. Finally, we've got this, got our Bluetooth working, and we're straight now, man. You're in Australia enjoying your coffee, and I'm over here just chilling in my air-conditioned pad.
I know, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll tell you what, man. We met one time when you were out to dinner with Alberto Del Rio when he was doing the Combate Americas. And right away, man, I was like, all right, this guy. First, I'd seen you on TV, of course. You can't miss the mustache and, all the MMA fights. And I was like, oh, man, this guy's – he's a homie. He's one of the boys, man. So right away, I knew, like, all right, this guy's – he's – We're on the salt of the earth. The same. We're the same.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that was we were good, man. We bonded from there, man. And Alberto's a great guy and his family with his dad and his brother. And that was actually cool. Sure. That was a really good good dinner we had there in Orange County, I believe we're right.
Yeah. It was in Orange County somewhere. Like I think in Huntington Beach area is that I think where we met up at.
Yeah.
You know what was weird is that I didn't know, and I guess it makes total sense, but I was thinking wrestling style that. You know, if there's a referee that's refereeing for the WWE, then he works for the WWE. Or if he works for AEW, he works for AEW. You guys work for all different, or you're independent, basically, as far as you guys aren't biased to any organization, and you can work Bellator, you can work UFC. Is that correct?
Yeah. Pretty much how it works is, we're with the Athletic Commission, right? So the Athletic Commission the ones who assigns you, and every state has an Athletic Commission. So I work for the California Athletic State Commission. I'm licensed all over the country and been all over the world to do events. Usually if it's a show like a UFC comes in or a Bellator or whatever wants to come into a state, the state are the ones who do the assignments, and there could be a recommendation by the company. Say, hey, we like Herb Dean. You know, he's our go-to guy, or Mark Goddard. You know, who's I think he's phenomenal. And let's get those guys, and then they'll call whoever they want to and check on availability, and that's kind of how it works.
That's so cool, man. That's cool. And Big John McCarthy.
Yeah, Big John, man. Yeah, Big John's a man, dude. He's the OG, man. That's the man,
yeah, right? I did filming at his gym in Valencia. He's got a big, huge. Does he still have the big MMA gym?
No, I think I'm almost positive he sold it. He sold it. He lives in Tennessee now.
So, oh, he moved. Okay, yeah. In Valencia, he had a big old place, man. Finally, I don't blame the guys like Rogan and stuff that are leaving because of their taxes. If I signed a $100 million deal, I'm going to move too.
Yeah, Tennessee, Texas, man. Shit, why not? You know, you don't have to deal with those crazy ass taxes. But yeah, John left. He uprooted out of California. He went to Nevada. He was living in Las Vegas, and then he was obviously refereeing a lot, and it was close to, you know, the airport was close to his pad, and Las Vegas is pretty convenient for flying. And he was there for a while, you know, and visited him out there at his pad. And he went to Tennessee. And I go, yeah, Tennessee, you know, he's like, I didn't think they were going to pull the trigger. And shit, dude, sure enough, he uprooted out of Nevada and he went to Tennessee, and that's where he's at.
Well, I might change my mind when it comes down to it, because, you know, I've been everywhere and there's no place like California. No wonder people live here and pay their taxes, because, you know, Cali's Cali, bro. I mean, there's always something to do, the beaches, the mountains, the deserts, everything's so close. So it'd be very hard for me to go live somewhere else. It'd be tough.
No, but you know what, dude? I agree. I love California, man. I mean, just like you said, for all the things you just said, I mean, everything is here, you know, and not to mention my family, you know, our families are out of here. And, I just love the weather here. You know, when you do go out of California and you do go to Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Chicago, hey brother, that's a different kind of cold, man.
There's three months that is a motherfucker anywhere you go, except for California. We got a couple weeks here or there, but man, anywhere you go, it's anywhere else. You got, you know, New York, you got cold for 3 months. You know, Florida, you got humid for 3 months. Phoenix, you got insanely hot for 3 months. Cali, man, it's always like year round. We're good, bro, you know?
Yeah, no, you can't beat the weather. You know, and if you want to bump it up, man, move to San Diego. You know, San Diego is even better than Los Angeles or Orange County, you know? San Diego's, me personally, I love San Diego.
I agree. San Diego's awesome, man. San Diego's great. And you get like the La Jolla area and all that area. Oh, that's right, brother. Yeah, for sure. You, you're a Cali boy, huh? Where'd you grow up?
East LA. East LA, man.
East LA.
East LA, man. Yeah, you know.
Really? East LA, yeah, but woo.
My parents were immigrants from Mexico, you know, just like most Mexican stories. And at some point in any Mexican's life, you cross paths and you end up in East LA. And my dad's from Culiacán, Sinaloa, and my mom's from Tepehuanes, Durango. And they came over to the United States, obviously, to live the American dream. You know, they have a lot of pride in being Mexican and where they're from, but they weren't going to fulfill their dreams that they wanted or to live the kind of quality of life like you can't here in the United States. And so they were here and they met here and they settled in East LA. And that's where I was born. You know, I was born in East LA, and then I went to Garfield High School and graduated class of 1991. And and my parents have worked very hard. You know, my dad worked, man, three jobs to make ends meet. It's funny, because I've talked, is you don't realize how broke down you really are, you know, and you don't realize it, because we were raised with so much love in our family, and we had cousins, and we had floor sleepers and shit like that, we had tendidos, we call them tendidos, you know, and everybody was at the pad, my dad never complained, would always take care of my cousins and my mom's side, and it was one big family. And my mom went to East LA College to learn to speak English, and she can educate herself, got into real estate, and it took her like four times or five times to pass that real estate exam. But my mom was resilient, and she knew what she wanted to do, even with the major language barrier. She put herself and kept studying and learned the English language, and so she passed the test. And you know, my dad was a butcher at Farmer John. He worked construction, and then he was a banquet waiter at night. My mom took care of all of us, and then she was going to school to learn to speak English until she passed the test and got into real estate. And you know, the rest is history. My parents have done very well for themselves and have properties now, and they're retired. They're living off their investments, and you know, they raised all four of us. You know, and we were all fortunate. We turned out pretty good. You know, so we're
American dream, bro, right there. The American dream at its fullest. And that's an awesome story. It's great to hear. Mine's similar, just no real estate and no school. I'm just punching people in the face. Or getting punched in the face.
I know a little bit about your story. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, man, because, you know, when I first saw you, when I see you on TV, I think, oh, this big old German guy or, you know, whatever. And then talking to you, you're the homie. You're a homie. There's always that one. Güerito in the Mexican gang, the Mexican group, you know, that was you, right? With the blue eyes.
Yeah, I was always that güero, man. And it's funny because, you know, I would hear people, you know, talk shit or talk a bunch of high powered masa, and I can hear them, and they think I'm white. Right. So I'm listening to them, and then I can hear, man, you know, este güero que se cree, and they're talking a bunch of madness, and we're saying something about a family member or something. They're trying to be funny. Right. I just sit there, and when they're done, I just respectfully go over there and tell them, hey, cabrón, no sabes con qué te estás poniendo. Si no sabes lo que estás hablando, mejor cállate los cinco, cabrón, antes que te metas en un pedo que no te puedes salir.
I love the look on their face, bro. The look on their face when that happens, like their eyes.
Bro. Yeah.
And then you just oh, I was just kidding.
Oh man, we're right? Just fucking around. Yeah. So it's all good, man. But yeah, you know, that was we grew up with my parents worked very hard, you know, and
of course, yeah.
They're
Mexican, you know, of course they do. Yeah, there's this misconception that Mexicans, you know, you know, like the Taco Bell, you know, with the taking the siesta with their little hats and stuff, you know, their sombreros. And no, man, Mexicans work their butts off. You know, everybody knows that Mexicans, we work hard. People work. They don't stop. Now, they play hard, too. When it's time to play, they play hard. But, bro, when they work, there's no playing around.
No. I mean, it's a cultural thing, you know. You know, they work hard and take care of their families, all about family, and come Saturday they get their drink on, Sunday they go to church, and then it's repeat again, you know?
That's it. Well, in wrestling was always a big Sunday was a big wrestling day, and we used to explain, one time my dad explained that to Michael Hayes, one of the Freebirds, the wrestlers, that he said, look, you know, Friday, you know, they get off work, you know, and they'll go out Saturday. The guys really go out. But then Sunday, because, you know, the wives are all mad at them because they've been going out for the last few nights, it's family day. So Sunday's a big wrestling day. So they always take the whole family and try to make up for their mamadas the last 2 days. And they take them to the wrestling matches on Sunday, you know? So wrestling was always Sunday was always a big wrestling day because they take all the family after church, boom, you know, they go eat, and then wrestling, bro. So that was, it was big back in the day.
You know what's funny about Lucha Libre, right? I grew up watching wrestling. I mean, I was a huge wrestling fan as a kid. I mean, to me, Hulk Hogan was like, I was a huge Hulkamaniac, man. I was just right. Loved Hulk Hogan, man. And I even dressed up like him for Halloween in high school. Yeah, man, you know, and but I remember, you know, I grew up a lot going to Tijuana as a kid, because my family, from my mom's side, from Durango, they moved to Tijuana. And so my cousins were there. So we were, it was funny. This is how innocent things were, is that I remember taking the Entre California bus on Atlantic and Olympic in East LA. It was like $12 to get on that bus. And I was like 11 or 12 years old.
Wow, that's a lot of money back then.
Back then, yeah.
For a bus, yeah. OCTD, we should take that and be like, you know, like I don't know, like $1.25 with the transfer and shit.
Yeah, I would get on that bus with my backpack for just to go to TJ for the weekend or for the week with my cousins. And when I would go to Tijuana a whole lot. I know Tijuana very well. I would go to El Auditorio de Tijuana to watch Lucha Libre.
That's right.
And that's an old school, like that was like, you know, that was not WWF or American style. It was Lucha Libre. It was its own identity. Lucha Libre.
It was Lucha Libre. With a mask and all the running. My second match of my life was in that arena.
El Auditorio.
Yeah.
And I was Calientes Boulevard.
Yeah.
And I remember going to that and going to the Lucha Libre matches with my cousins and you know, they had all the cool masks and you know, it was like a huge treat for us as kids, you know, just to go and you know, I don't know how many pesos it was to get in, but you know, it wasn't really a bad seat in the house. And right. it was always cool in there, man. You know, you had all the hardcore diehard luchador fans, and it was cool, man. It was pretty badass. And that's, you know, so I love the Lucha Libre, and I was she remember being a huge WWF fan, man. You know, with man, I just enjoyed it as a kid. You know, that was so much fun actually watching it with my dad. You know, we used to watch it.
Yeah, man, totally. But we used to go. I mean, of course, we were in Tijuana and stuff like that in Tijuana, but we'd go in, you know, right out of high school, and we'd go down to Revolution Street and go hit Baby Rock. Remember Baby Rock, you know, because we could drink over there, right? And, you know, remember, they'd always have like the, you know, the music, like the pump up the jam, pump it up, you know.
Oh, yeah, you disco, man. You go way back.
Yeah, bro. That was it, man. Then we'd go there for the, you know, not even the night. We'd go there and then we'd drive home afterwards. God, I can't believe it. Pendejos, but we did.
Baby Rock was it the place to be? You know, that was right. That was like, man, Baby Rock was cool with the rocks. You walk in there and you know, two stories, and you know what, dude? Baby Rock was my first professional MMA fight that I refereed.
Really, for anybody listening, Baby Rock was a bar, like a disco bar in Tijuana, Mexico. That, you know, a lot of the Americans would go over in the GIs and stuff because we could drink at 18 there. So that's where we were at. But that's just to let everybody know. But so
that's a total historical thing. You got to give the foundation of what Baby Rock was. It was like the
Baby
coolest.
Baby Rock, bro.
It was the coolest club in TJ. And everybody from San Diego, from Los Angeles, even Bakersfield would go there because it was a cool place to go. And obviously, it's like everything else. It's ran its course, but Baby Rock was my first professional MMA show I ever worked was there at Baby Rock. Yeah, it was my first show, and I did it for free. You know, I really just – I needed to get experience. And Larry Landless, who was refereeing at the time, took me with him to go over there, and I actually went with my old best friend, rest in peace, Joe Camacho. You know, he was the one that got me into jiu-jitsu and MMA. He goes, hey, try to get into this TJ show. And he knew Larry and was like, hey, man, give Mike a shot. And Big John McCarthy had told me that you need to get experience. And so I used to do a lot of smokers at gyms. And you know, back then, you know, they were actually illegal shows. And I didn't even know they were illegal, and I'm a cop, you know. So I was refereeing these shows. And I didn't even know they were illegal, man, you know. You know, it was just gym on gyms, right? So when I went to Baby Rock, it was my first like real bam, big, you know, MMA show, and all the San Diego talent was there, and they were fighting you know, the TJ kids from Tijuana. And you know, anytime you fight a Mexican, it's gonna be a brawl. You know, if you get a Mexican on Mexican, it's gonna be toe-to-toe, and it's in the blood. There's Mexicans don't have angles, man, just move forward. And they bang. Right. And what I remember vividly about it was I had a fight who was a local kid. He was from Ensenada. from Ensenada or Rosarito, one of those places. But he was a big Mexican, and he got cut like sick, like a nasty cut above his eye, and the blood was going into his eye. And the mechanic thing is, you know, when it's depending on where the placement of the cut is and the severity of it and going into the eyes, just affecting the fighter from performing, you know, it's a safety issue. And I call time. And then I defer to my fight doctor. God bless TJ, bro. This is where it gets good. I call time, and this Mexican wanted a fight. He still was in the fight. I asked the fight doctor, I go, you know, time out, doctor, you know, he's a Spanish speaker. I go, Tiene cortado. Well, the doctor was so hammered. He was drinking, and he was trying to hook up with the ring girls. So I hit him, and he's like, he had his back turned towards me, and I go, doctor, he's like, and he's over here talking to go, you know, he's trying to hook it up instead of paying attention to the fight. And he looks up at the fighter, and he goes, It's okay. Está bien. He's okay. And I go, what? I was like, dude, I knew that was, even then, I was, you know, a novice. And I saw that. And I said, well, I mean, if, I guess it's the fight doctor says, you know, it's okay. And obviously, you know, there's things we can actually stop the contest, you know, through experience and what I've done now. And I know what the rules are. We can stop the contest ourselves or the doctor. But I let the fight go. Dude, he ends up knocking the guy out. He comes back.
Really? He came back, huh?
He came back.
And Mexican style, he probably looked at you like.
Oh, I mean, I was like the biggest punk, dude. He thought I was some bad dog.
You know, though, but that's your job. Whether they can come back and fight still or not, your number one thing is safety. And, sure. You know, and it's you do. You may win the fight, but you're going to lose an eye. I mean, that's not what it's about. You know, it's about coming back and fighting the next day. But Mexican style is, I'll lose the eye and let's go, you know?
Yeah, they're in the moment and they don't think. And that's just, you know, that's just Mexicans. You know, a lot of these guys have that warrior mentality. And part of your job as a referee is to protect yourself from yourself. Yeah. Protect the fighter from themselves, you know? And that's
absolutely. This isn't the 1800s where they, you know, they fight to the death or they fight to one drops. Hey, it's, you know, you're there for safety and, you know, it's a sport. I totally get it.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, Baby Rock, you brought that up, dude. That was a major flashback, man. Yeah, wow.
Baby Rock, bro. And then we used to go to you know, Papas and Beer in Rosarito, and then Ensenada Fabian, you know, and you remember those, right? Papas and Beers. Oh. Now Papas and Beer is big now, you know, in Cancun, it's all over the place. But back then it was just like Rosarito and Ensenada.
There was one in TJ. They opened up one in Tijuana.
Oh, was it? See, I never went to the one in TJ, but we'd always go to the one in Rosarito because it had the volleyball court on the sand right there. Yeah. I mean, so the first time I went to that, man, I was like, oh my God, I just died and went to heaven. Like literally, we're on the beach in the volleyball courts in the bar. People were walking around, you know, girls in bikinis. We're able to drink beers at 18. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Then we'd go get the little, you know, the little the fish tacos right around the corner, or the little, man. Right? Remember, or the little hot dogs with the bacon wrapped around them.
Oh yeah, you go and the little buckets full of little beers.
Oh yeah,
you get to go, man. You just put it down, man, for a few bucks. Yeah, man, right. You're in heaven, bro. Dude.
That was fun, man. That's when it was back in the day. It was safe. You could go. It was a good time, man.
It was very safe, man. It was actually, you know, considering the way things are now and how things are down south, man, that was, you know, that was actually, those are some very fond memories of going there. And it's part of your adolescence of growing up, you know, and really enjoying a safe, somewhat party scene, you know. And the worst thing that'll happen to you, get into a fight and, you know, you get your ass kicked.
Big deal.
All right. Yeah. You know, it's a big deal.
You know, and it's sad because Mexico is such a beautiful country. Like, it's one of the most beautiful countries. I love going to Mexico. There's so much different parts about it and the culture, but you know, it's pretty dangerous now at times and at places. And
for sure,
it's sad. It's sad, man. I miss that, and I wish that like the world was able to go, you know, experience how awesome Mexico actually is.
It is, man. But you do, you know, it's not. look at Acapulco, what it's turned into. Acapulco right. is just a gorgeous area in Guerrero. And, I mean, hell, it's all the beheadings you know, it turned into just a disastrous, scary place to be. You know, it's a cartel and, right. you know, you just don't want to be there. And unfortunately, they kill that market for tourists, you know, because of, of what's going on down south. But hey, that's, you know, that's a horrible situation because you're right. Mexico is a very beautiful place, but unfortunately, as much as I love Mexico, if you right. go there, you better know where you're at. You better stick around to the tourist area and understand, you better know your place because you're not in the United States. You know, you're a guest there, you know, and they'll let you know, if you act like a fool.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. For mm-hmm. sure. That's why a lot of times I still go to like Hawaii, because Hawaii, I feel like it's in a different country, but then it's America still. I got the best of both worlds, you know. Speaking of which, now you being not being safe and stuff, but your first job, but you're an LA County Sheriff, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's my real job. Been a cop now for over 25 years. It'll be 26 years December since I started the academy. So December 27th, man, 1994 was my first day. Yeah.
I got some of my boys that I used to bartend with and work in restaurants with that are, you know, LA County sheriffs now and stuff, and almost getting ready to retire and stuff. But yeah. Man, you guys got to start in the jails and stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I did actually. I worked Men's Central Jail. I worked there for 5 years, like all the deputies did. And, I worked the high power floors, the gang floors. I've always been really interested in gangs. That's always been my thing. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy the subcultures of it, and I always found it fascinating to see how it worked and the structure of it. And
well, you get it. So well, you grew up with it, and you saw your boys go, you know, one way or the other. You went to sheriffs, and they went to gangs, you know.
Yeah, and just it was. I used to interview everybody because they were always there. You know, you get a couple of sandwiches to a gangster who's hardcore and has a lot of knowledge to give you, that's going to teach you on how to communicate, how to talk, mannerisms, what to say, what not to say, and how to behave, you know. And I learned a lot. See, that's a good thing about the sheriff's department, is the time you do in the jails. It prepares you because you're surrounded and you're outnumbered by inmates. Mm-hmm. So it gives you that confidence that you wouldn't get out of a kid who just graduates the academy and out into the streets, because they're still very immature. Not to say that the deputy sheriffs in the jails aren't immature, because we did a lot of stupid nonsense, but you grow up and you grow up hard there and you learn a lot. But I did 5 years in the jails. I think that's a little bit too much. I think ideal for a kid, for a young deputy to do, it should be at least 2 years, but because of the way budget cuts and everything is, it some people are there longer. But I did five, and then from there I went to East LA. I actually went back to the community I grew up in, and I really enjoyed doing that. That was something important to me.
And that's, I hear some of the stories, man, of going through that and going through the jails and stuff. And I mean, that's a tough one, man. That's some of the stories that my friends have told me. It's in the women's jails and stuff, man. There's no playing in that, you know. And one thing that I saw on your Instagram, when there was a lot of the riots going on in Los Angeles, and you posted something with, you had the homies there. I mean, they were the homies patrolling East LA right there saying, hey, no, you guys aren't going to come and do that stupid shit in our city and stuff. And these are the homies with the tattoos on their heads and all hanging out there. And they're right next to the cops, to the LA County Sheriff, saying, hey, these are the sheriffs. They know. Yeah. You know, they know us. They've been in the jail with us. They know who we are. They're not just some punk ass cop on the street. And I was like, wow, that I didn't think about that, but it makes a lot of sense.
You know what, man? I felt it was important to put that out. You know, anything that I do put out on my social media, it comes from the heart and it's true. If I believe in something, I'm going to put it out if I think it makes sense and it'll open people's eyes. For example, what you just mentioned right now in East LA, what had happened is looters and rioters tried to take over and try to loot the Nike store on Whittier Boulevard. Okay. Oh, and I know, you know, and I know, Whittier Boulevard very well, you know,
right.
And that part of Whittier Boulevard is the most, is like the, that's like the Mecca of East LA's cruising scene. That's where it all started. There's a lot of historical landmarks there and
yeah, I got some boys from the Imperials Car Club and stuff, the OGs that when they first started, when they started back in the day, and they said, man, they were just cruising down and just enjoying it. It wasn't about gangs, whatever, it was just cruising, bro, you know?
You say the Imperials, bro, that is old school. That's like the OG of cruising right there, man.
That's right,
that's
man.
Like, that's straight like old school Chicano cruising right there. That's like, that goes, man, that's deep back.
The Imperials. You know? Imperials was Imperials. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm not a member of a car club. I have a 63 Impala convertible, SS convertible, but that's the one I'm affiliated with. That's the one that I associate with. Great guys, cool dudes. You know, they were one of the first. That's the OGs right there, you know.
That's but, the OGs right there.
A lot of other great car clubs and stuff, you know, and it's not like it was back in the day to where they'd look at you like, oh, what car club are you about, you know, and try to outdo each other. But they still do, you know, hey, it's pride. So the Imperials, man, shout out to my boys.
You know, it's funny because when you mention that, they tried to loot the Nike store and the deputies were out there and they cleaned it up. Well, what's ironic was, I actually take pride in saying this, is that, you know, you're not going to mess. You're an outsider coming into East LA to the neighborhood where you don't belong. Right. And you're trying to take over this thing here. And these people take pride. And they picked the wrong street, man. That's Whittier Boulevard. And they went there with their pendejadas coming in there and trying to loot and all kinds of stuff and destroy stuff and challenge the police. They weren't down with that. They went in there, they kicked their butts out of there, get on, you know, kick rocks. And then the deputies cleaned up the whole place and the deputies' response was on top of it. And the sheriff's department don't play. East LA station doesn't play. And Sheriff Villanueva was on top of it. We're not going to have that. So they took a proactive approach. But what was ironic was, like I posted up in that video, that same day, to protect East LA and the Boulevard, these old veteranos and car clubs and all these old cholos and residents of the area came out there and they parked their lowriders on Whittier Boulevard and stood tall with the deputies and were there. Hey man, you know what? This is our neighborhood. You know, we're going to protect our own and no outsider going to come in here and destroy us because, you know, we get along with it. And it was like an amazing dialogue between the community and the sheriff's department, which is, you know, we have a job to do and we're going to do it. And sometimes it ain't pretty how we do it, but you know, when you got to come in and you got to go or else you shouldn't have done that. And they respect that. And it was funny is that these guys have been in jail before, been arrested by deputies, but that's how much respect they have for the sheriffs that they came out there. And I thought that was pretty amazing, man. And it was important because you had, like you said, these tatted down dudes and like real hardcore dudes. And they were down to protect the Whittier Boulevard and their neighborhoods. And I thought that was pretty cool, man. That was right.
That's Rasa right there, man. That's you pride, they take pride in their neighborhoods and their place, their home, you know, that's their home and nobody's going to mess it up. You know, they've worked hard to keep it nice like that, you know, and you're not going to come in and jack that place up. And, you know, hey, you know, peaceful protest, you protest, whatever it is, what it is. But at the same time, you ain't going to jack up a place. It ain't going to be, you know, the O.J. Simpson riots and stuff. That's not going to happen there.
No, it's a different kind of animal now. And you know, I've been out there actually during these riots. It's not pretty. It's not nice. When it first kicked off with George Floyd and that incident happened, hey man, I had the same sentiments as the public, as you and I both. We talked about it. I don't like the way it went down. I thought it was wrong. I wasn't down with what the police did. You know, I have very strong feelings about that. I thought the officers were punks. That's weak. You don't do that to somebody. I mean, the dude's handcuffed, man. You don't. You do what you got to do. And that's it. You don't need to be on his knee on his throat. You know, well, those are my sentiments, you know, I think once you're done, handcuff. Once the dude's done, you know, he's got something coming to him. You handle it. Hey, man, get him up, get him out of there. And that's it. Get him treated, and that's it. And you write your report, right. You explain what you did, and, you're obviously justified in what you did. However, I had the same feelings as a whole lot of other people, and a lot of cops did, and a lot of cops still do. But that doesn't give everybody the right to go over there and think everyone's a bad guy. You know, every cop's horrible. And that's where we're at today, at odds with these hate groups and these domestic terrorists, because they are, and look what they're doing in Portland, Seattle, Chicago, come on, New York. New York is awesome, man. It's a shithole now. Yeah. And, here in Los Angeles, they're trying to do the same thing. But fortunately for us, we got Villanueva here, our Sheriff Villanueva, who don't play. And we're not going to allow that to happen here in Los Angeles. So
yeah, it's such a tough thing. Like, you have to, it's so PC now. You got to be PC, which is, I totally get it. I see where we've come from in the past. At the same time, you still got to rule. You got to put your fist down, and you got to not let this stuff happen. Good peaceful protesting, I get it, but looting, protesters protest, looters loot. Two different things. And it's like, guys, you ruin it for everybody. When people are protesting something, whatever it is, whether, it's the women protesting, or a Million Man March or the George Floyd protests, I get it. But once you start looting and you're destroying and causing havoc, then you're totally taken away from your protesting. You've made it a completely different thing now, So I understand. I totally get, I'm not for, this defunding the police stuff. It just doesn't make sense. Without the police, there's, who are you going to call? There is no Ghostbusters, You got to call the police, and that is what it is.
No, man, I agree. I mean, there's, it's just a complicated situation. Politics playing a part in what's going on. And, but you got to be smarter than that. You got to rise above it. I have no problem with people protesting and going against even stuff that I believe in or not. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm not tripping. Hell, you and I, we've talked a lot, man, and we're at odds with a lot of things. And we're like, right on, bro. Hey, so what's next, dog? Right. It's just, you move forward, man. And you can't have everybody, you can't impose your beliefs on everybody and expect them to think like you're like robots, but do it peacefully. Be respectful, be mindful of where you're at, and make your statement and get on. And, that's it. It's that simple.
Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. That is bwhustle.com/join.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
No, for sure. I totally agree with you. And it's like, hey, we all have differences of opinions. You can't impose your opinions on somebody else. But at the same time, we respect others' opinions. I get it. And that's, I think, where we're at right now in this country. It's like, I don't know when love and respect went out of style. Like, still, I still love this country in the United States and my fellow man. I may not have to agree with them, but at the same time, it's like, you know, love and respect. And I still believe love's going to win. Love wins all. Love trumps all, right? Without saying that.
That's it.
Yeah. So how did you start? Like, how did you get you trained? How did you start training, you know, mixed martial arts or like, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu? Let me start that again. That was a little messed up. So how did you start training Brazilian jiu-jitsu and martial arts?
You know what? I boxed when I was younger. I started at 10 years old, you know, nice. And 10, 11 years old. And, you know, I wasn't good at all. I wasn't the greatest or anything. Yeah. Sure. But I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed boxing. I think I was a huge fan of growing up with Julio Cesar Chavez, Marvelous Marvin right. Hagler, Vinny Paciencia, Thomas the Hitman Hearns, you know, that whole era. I really enjoyed boxing. I was fascinated with it, you know, and I enjoyed it. And I boxed for a few years and it just, I didn't really stick to it. I really wasn't that good, but I learned, you know, I learned the mechanics of it just to protect myself. You know, as I got older, a buddy of mine who I mentioned earlier was Joe Camacho, Nini. He's the guy I went to high school with. He was actually the first black belt in East LA. And he was an MMA fighter, but before it was MMA, it was called NHB, No Holds Barred. And it was NHB. He goes, hey, Mike, man. He goes, hey, bro, you got to get into this thing called jiu-jitsu. I go, jiu-jitsu? He goes, and I was watching the UFCs. I was watching the great Hoist Gracie, you know, do magic and choke people out. And it was like, a little skinny dude is choking people. I thought it was like some secret stuff, you know, it was ninja shit. And, he goes, it's called jiu-jitsu. And he goes, look, let me take you to a gym that's close to your house. And I was so naive, man. And so stubborn. And I was like, nah, man, I don't want to go on the ground and wrestle with a dude. That's not my thing. You know, it's like, if I can't knock you out on my feet, then on your feet, then I don't belong there, and I deserve to get my ass kicked. Well, I was working in jails, like you mentioned. Yeah, it was just really idiotic shit. So I, you know, I was working in the jails. He goes, look, I don't want you to get hurt. You can contract AIDS or some kind of STD or something, hepatitis, by guys that bleed in the jails or whatever. He goes, this is, you can choke someone out, and it looks great on video. It's safe. So eventually he came by and picked me up. And he took me to the first time I went to the gym, which was this gym that I'm at now, New Breed Academy in Santa Fe Springs. And I went there and I began training. And back then I was like 250 pounds in the jails. So I was a big kid. And I got on the mat and I remember, you know, there was a bunch of white belts. I thought, I didn't know how to wrestle. I didn't know anything. And my buddy was, Joe was like 5'7", maybe 145 pounds, if that. And he goes, just come at me hard. And, you know, I'm good, homie. You know, he was like a homie. And I remember him taking me down and he's just, he rear naked choked me. He arm barred me. He triangled me. He umaplata'd me. He knee barred me. He just neon bellied me. He just raped me. He kicked my ass. And I was like, you know, I was so
humbled. What is this? What is this thing?
I got busted down. Honestly, Chavo, I got busted down to training with a 12-year-old. That's how bad I sucked and how humiliated I was that I wrestled with a 12th grader. I grappled with a 12th grader my first day. That 12th grader now is Noah Tillis. He's got his own gym now. He's a black belt. He's a little stud. And we became, you know, we were good friends. But that kid was a goofy little white boy with little – glasses, and the only reason why I kept him down is because I was 250 pounds and had man strength on a 12-year-old boy. And at that point, I had two choices. One, walk out of that gym and hope this nightmare never comes back to haunt me and nobody ever remembered that I was there, or face my fear, eat that humble pie again, and go back and learn something that's gonna save my life. or I mainly did it for my job. I wouldn't even think about refereeing. And I came back, and that's how it all started for me. I fell in love with jiu-jitsu, and I got into another school that was it was called Shark Tank, and that was NHB fighting. It was more MMA. It was basically just wrestling, and it wasn't a formalized jiu-jitsu school. It was just basically a fight school, and I was going to both schools to learn how to, you know, fight on my feet and stand up and wrestle, and then I was learning jiu-jitsu at the same time, and I was just obsessed with it, and I just right. it just consumed me, and here I am today. I got involved in officiating, and it was Big John McCarthy, who's the one that took me under his wing, and he's the one that schooled me. I wouldn't be here where I'm at today if it wasn't for Big John McCarthy. He's the one that helped me out.
And how did he get you starting in the ref game?
Well, when I first started, I showed interest. My jiu-jitsu coach, which was John Iwano at the time, he's the one that made the first UFC glove. He's the one that made the Iwano glove. Him and John were tight. They were good friends. And, you know, he had done business for him for his gym. And also he made the first UFC glove. So they knew each other. And he goes, hey, they're going on my students. His name is Mike. He's all, you know, he's a sheriff. You know, you're LAPD. He's a big kid. You know, he's interested in being a referee. I think he'd be good. And John's like, hey, you know, John is such an unselfish guy. He's a good dude. He'll do anything for anybody if you show interest, you know. And he goes, hey, if he's interested, tell him to do this. Tell me to get some training in, give him my number. So I listened to everything John told me, you know, and I needed to get experience. So I started refereeing smokers. I was a blue belt at the time. And I started refereeing smokers. And
smokers was like at a bar, like a fights at a bar type thing, right? Or underground type thing?
Yeah, kind of underground fights. It's like, actually, it kind of was. They're illegal. I mean, is what it is, and not like, it's kind of like fights between two schools. So my school against your school, and you get some kids, and then we grab another school, so we kind of match make, and then you have smokers. So it's kind of like who's got the baddest gym, but they needed a referee for it. So I was a ref for those gyms. So I got to know all these camps and got familiarized myself with all these fighters, and that's how I started. And I remember doing like 25 fights on a weekend for a show by myself, and I was just getting experience. And that's when Baby Rock, my buddy Larry Landis, goes, hey, you want to go? I'm reffing a show, come on out and you can work your first pro show. And it was at Baby Rock. And then from there, it came down to licensing, and I would go to these commission hearings, and Big John basically, he co-signed for me, and he goes, hey, license this guy. And I got licensed and I started working. And every step of the way with everything I've done, even with my own personal stuff in life and whatever I got going on, Big John has always been there for me. And he's been not only a mentor, but he's been a good friend. He talks to my son, you know, all the time, and with my lady, we're very close with him. And, you know, I don't think he's yelled at anybody more than me, because he does have a temper. He's a man with very little patience, but he expects you to learn. And if you drop the ball, you don't listen, you act like a dumbass, he'll chin check you hard. And John's a no bullshit man. I got nothing but tremendous things to say about the man. He's a very kind, solid motherfucker. He's just a good dude. He's a very loyal man. And not only that, but his wife is also awesome too, and so is his family. So, but if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here. He's the one that pushed me along the way.
That's cool. I don't know John, but I hear really good things about him, and, you know, people talk about him, that he's, you know, he was the OG, but he was also, you know, he's a man. He's a man's man. He's very respected in the business, and you know, people, you know, I now see him commentating, right? He's doing some commentating for Bellator.
Yeah, he's a commentator. But see, with John, not only that, he practiced. He was a boxer, actually. You know, for as big as his ass is, he can actually move. You know, really? For as big as he is, yeah, he's got some movement. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. So, you know, he's not a slouch. Yeah, and you know, and not only that, he's got that. He's an ox, man. So he's got that strength. He's got that crazy. you know, strength that'll just, that's just the way he is. And on top of that, he's a total package, man. He's a solid dude.
That's cool, man. That's awesome. But you also got a bunch of other things going on, man. I see you got a pretty good acting resume now, man. Right? I see you're like, man. Oh, this guy's getting Hollywood on me now. He's, you know, I see it all over the place. Yeah. You're doing some stuff with the Mayans, the TV show the Mayans, the spinoff of the Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah. I got a role on that. I got a recurring role on that. I'm the Tucson chapter president. Ibarra is my name. Mm. And I did two episodes last season and hopefully more this season. So we'll see how it turns out, but I am back. And we'll see what happens. I haven't got the scripts yet or anything, but I don't know what capacity I'll be doing things, but I'm sure it's going to be interesting for sure.
That's awesome, man. You got a great look, man, for sure. That's really cool. Are you guys filming yet? Are you guys getting ready to come back? Do you have a start date?
It should start filming here in a few weeks. So once they start filming, they'll be getting going. So, but you know, like anything subject to change. I mean, you know how that is everything just gets pushed back and everything else. So as far as I know, this is like the third time I've been told we're going to film, but you know, we're
everything's up in the air right now.
Through this time.
Everything's up in the air with the quarantine and the COVID stuff right now. I mean, that's why I'm here in Brisbane, Australia right now, because we're supposed to be filming, you know, this new NBC show in Los Angeles, and because of the COVID, everything's shut down, you know, so we had to come here, and I'm here for 9 weeks.
So how long do you gotta be locked down for?
2 weeks quarantine. So as far as Brisbane's very, very strict, like literally I got off the plane. I mean, I had the police escort me and one of the other guys off. They put us on, you know, I mean, it's very, very, you can't just, okay, go do your thing. You've got to go right to quarantine. I got 2 weeks in this hotel room to where I can't even go outside. They, if I have an order, like of some groceries or something, they bring it to the front desk, knocks on my door, leaves to the front door. I open the door, grab it and walk back in. So it's 2 weeks, but as soon as I'm out, at least here in Brisbane, there's no masks and everything's open. So that's why there's like no cases here because of that fact.
Well, okay. I get it. 2 weeks is a long time, dude.
2 weeks is a long time, man. You know, and it's, I'm getting work done. I'm getting to talk to you and doing some other different podcasts and, you know, I'm getting my workouts here in the hotel room. I'm getting very creative. It is what it is, man. You know, I get it done and, you know, hey, if you got to make some money and you're not working in Los Angeles, you just got to do it. You know, it is what it is, but.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah. You got to get it done.
One thing that people that are not thriving, but doing okay in the quarantine and the lockdown and stuff is people that can pivot. You know, everybody's life has changed. Everybody's had to do something kind of else. But if you're just stuck with that one thing and that gets shut down, then, and you can't like, you know, pivot or go a little bit of a different direction, then some people are just like, that's it. Like, oh my God, life is ending. With me, man, I had so many different things going on that, you know, kind of wrestling kind of shut down and, you know, Hollywood's never shut down. You know, so, you know, entertainment's always going and that shut down because of everything COVID. So I'm like, all right, so let's think. I started doing, you know, the podcast, you know, I started doing like cameos and that kind of stuff. So still got some money coming in and, you know, hopefully things get better here very soon, you know?
Yeah, man, God willing it does, man. Hopefully these things start opening up and things start getting better here soon, you know? But just got to ride the wave, bro. That's it, dude.
Well, I tell you what, your inspiration, I'm looking at your Instagram and your social media, and man, your son, first of all, he was a kick-ass amateur wrestler, but now he's at West Point.
Yeah.
You've got to be proud of that, man. That's huge.
Yeah, I'm very proud of my boy. Yeah, you know, it was a tough go-around. You know, I told you before, I was a single dad. And with full custody. So it was mom and dad.
Wow.
And, you know, that was very, very challenging, you know, just it was stressful, you know, and sometimes I didn't have time. I couldn't pick him up because I'm at work and Right. You know, but like with everything else, you know, you make things work and you make friends with other parents but wrestling was a very big, big part of his structure development. And actually, jiu-jitsu and MMA was, because he did some kickboxing and Muay Thai and judo. And then he got into wrestling, but wrestling is what took over. And, you know, he was at St. John Bosco, which is a powerhouse wrestling school.
Yeah. And, wow. You know, great high school.
Solid school for wrestling and sports. It's a good program, and it fit what he was doing. So I put him there, and you know, he
thrived. That's not cheap. Right? Paying not cheap. Those Catholic Trinity League in California.
Yeah,
Monterey, Bosco. God, there's some Santa Margarita. There's a whole bunch of them.
Servite,
all powerhouse. Yep. Schools with sports and academics and everything, great schools, but they're expensive, man. They really are. You're paying a lot, and we're already paying a lot of taxes in California as it is. You're paying schools too. That's tough.
You know, it was. You're right, dude. It was very tough, man. It was. You know, I had full custody of him. You know, and I did go through a divorce, and you know, that wasn't cheap, and. but what kept me afloat was,
we'll leave that there. We'll just leave that right there.
Just stop there for my blood pressure rises. Yeah. But, but, you know, it was tough, man. And one thing that got me through was working all those MMA shows. It's what's funny is that if you saw me officiating or you saw a show I worked, that didn't go to me. That was going to my son's school, tuition, training, right. Coaching, diet, food. He ate and breathed and trained like a professional athlete here. I'm surrounded by professional athletes and have contacts with great athletes, that they would talk to my son. And actually, Big John was one that was always real big in his development and he would steer me in the right direction. You know, I had Chael Sonnen, is one of those dudes, man. You know, his personality is his personality, like a pro wrestler. He comes out, he can talk his way to any fight. He's actually a brilliant dude, real smart dude, but he's a charismatic dude. He's just a fucking shit talker and he's good at it. But one thing about Chael is that he would go out of his way to make videos and send to my son to get motivated for wrestling. But who does that? You know, those are the little things that behind the scenes that you see about certain people. You're like, wow, you know, on TV, he's that character of the villain. But in reality, man, he's a big, lovable man. He's a good dude. He's a family man. And he would do videos for my boy every time he would wrestle. He would send him a video, go, say, send this to your boy. And so wrestling took over for him, and you know, academics were big here at my house. So you know, he put himself in position. You know, we worked hard I worked very hard to get him to where he's at. But he's the one that had to put in the work. And he applied for Annapolis for Naval Academy and West Point, and West Point called him first. So he chose West Point, and but he did have a very good wrestling. He's got a good wrestling pedigree for sure. You know, I think he was a 3-time All-American. He was a Greco state champion and he was a state qualifier. So
that's huge. And California is tough. Every state's tough, but California's got a lot of different levels to get to state, you know, for sure. That's tough. That's great though. I appreciate that. Cause I'm such a wrestler, you know, I was such a wrestler and now, you know, doing jiu-jitsu and that kind of stuff, you know, I definitely see the great relationship in both of them. You know both. Ooh, that's you, the man. You can throw some striking in that. Forget it. It's over, right?
And he's got youth, so you know.
Yeah. And he's invincible right now. Yeah,
he's invincible. He's doing well, and you know, we're blessed, and you know, it's tough, and he's had his moments. It's been rough. You know, that school's there to break you down and build you back up and humble you.
That's right.
So, you know, you just got to keep on grinding, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, or else West Point wouldn't be West Point, you know?
That's right.
So
that's right.
Kudos to that. Kudos to West Point for sure.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now also too, I see, you know, your Instagram stuff and see what you got going on there. And I see you posting stuff outside, hanging out with your cigar and your little tequila right there. And I'm like, oh man, when am I going to get over there and go experience this with you, man?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, matter of fact, the last time I talked to you, bro, I was outside. I was smoking a cigar and I was talking to you, sipping tequila.
Nice. Yeah, it's awesome, bro. That's awesome. I love it. That's one of my pastimes. I love a good, real good, like a extra añejo tequila, and an extra añejo with. It's almost like a, bourbon. They're just, you know, distilled in like bourbon or bought, you know, bourbon barrels, and it's not like, you know, Patron where you shoot or whatever. Yeah, cognac. Yeah, and you sip it, you know, in a snifter glass and you nice cigar, and it's what I like about it is that you do that when you got nothing but time. There's no rush. You sit there and enjoy life.
You know what, man? I work very hard. You know, I work very hard for what I have. Grateful and I'm very thankful for what I have in the position that I'm at with my health and everything else. And you know, life is good. Things could be a hell of a lot worse in both our lives. You know what I mean? So we're definitely blessed. And you know, with that said, is I go outside. Just like that's my time to just decompress.
Yeah, man, totally.
I go out there just like I grab my tequila. I love Mandala tequila. I don't know if you've had it before. Mm. It's amazing. We'll hook it up for sure. It's when you sip. But all their tequila is great. All the, you know, Reposado, Añejo or Blanco. They're all amazing. Mm. And the extra Añejo is just wow, off the chart. But I go out there, my little speaker, put some Pink Floyd on, man, and I'm straight, man. I'm good. You know, a little Dark Side of the Moon action, and oh, it's all good, man. Can't go wrong with
brother,
that.
That's awesome, man. I'm right there with you, man. I never was growing up a Pink Floyd guy. I didn't appreciate them until I got older, and like, wow, Pink Floyd's so good. Just listening to them. I thought it was like, you know, like, drug stoner music when I was younger, and now I hear it and I was like, wow, these guys are straight up musicians, like amazing.
They're talented, yeah, they're phenomenal musicians, and their music, there's no other band like Pink Floyd. You know, they're you know a Pink Floyd song when you hear it, because it is a little out there, you know.
But it's great, bro. It's just chill. What I like about it, it's chill, it's relaxed, you know, and like you say, you decompress, you throw that on. You got one of your buddies out there just kind of rapping, chilling, smoking that cigar, nice, easy, sipping the tequila. You know, we're not drinking a bottle of tequila or having eight cigars, just one nice sip it, bro. That's what it's about right there, man. I wish I was doing that right now, bro.
Yeah, that's it. But you got to quarantine for 2 weeks, so you're stuck, bro.
I'm stuck, man. I am stuck right here with none of that. So it is what it is. Hey, it's cool. I got a little balcony, which is nice. I got a little balcony. I'm on the third floor. I got a view of the next apartment. It's not a great view, but the sun hits right at just the right time at certain time of the day. And I just go out there in a little slice of sun. I kind of get into it a little bit, you know, but it's cool. It's nice. I got the sliding glass door open at all times, and just, it could be worse, like you said, but I like it, man. It's a nice little, it makes me feel like a bachelor again.
Yeah, quarantine life could suck, man. 2 weeks is isolated by yourself, man. That's just, you know, you're on straight lockdown, dude. You're almost in jail.
Totally, totally. Hey, one thing we do, the last thing we do here on Suplexes and Cervezas is I throw some rapid fire questions at you, and you know, there's no right or wrong answer, just kind of whatever. It's just to see what your fans see, get them to know more about you and kind of what your likes, dislikes. You cool with it?
Curveball. Shoot.
Yeah. All right. So, are you a vintage car guy or a new car guy?
Vintage.
Gotcha. Me too. I mean, I love the new cars, but don't get me wrong. Vintage is, they don't make them like that anymore, right? Were you Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair?
100% Hulk Hogan, and I do the best Hulk Hogan impersonation.
Let's hear it.
Let me tell you something, me and Gene. I've been hanging and banging, brother, but Hardy Davidson way too long, man. I've been saying my prayers, taking my vitamins, and doing the training, and believing in myself, man. Those are the four commandments and all the little Hulkamaniac I live by, brothers. But let me tell you one thing, Chavo Guerrero. Let me tell you one thing. What Jack gonna do, brother, when Hulkamania runs wild on you?
Wow, bro, that was great. I almost thought it was like listening to you sound just like Hulk. That's awesome. You sound just like him. That's great, man. That's yeah. That's really good, man. I love it. Okay, that's cool. Very cool. All right. Are you in, like? Now I know that you are a referee for MMA, but there's both things. But are you a MMA or boxing?
MMA.
Were you an Ali or Tyson guy?
Tyson.
Thomas Hitman Hearns or Marvelous Marvin Hagler?
Without a doubt, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, 100%.
Man, remember those fights?
Best three rounds of boxing.
Those were insane, right? They just banged yeah. And just toe to toe, bro. I still see those.
I had a poster of Marvelous Marvin Hagler in my room as a kid with Julio Cesar Chavez, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Vinny Paciencia.
Really?
The Tasmanian Devil. Yep.
That's awesome. Hold on a second. I'm going to move this because my battery's getting low, so I'll edit that out. 1 second. I don't know if my background might go, but let me plug this in. Hold on. Okay. Oh, there we go. Okay.
You're good. You still got your kitchen.
Yeah, there's my kitchen right there. Yeah, totally. Okay, so back to it. Vitor Belfort or Randy Couture?
Randy Couture, 100%.
The man.
Love Randy. Randy's one of my favorites.
The natural,
Captain America. He's the shit. Two-time division champ. He's the best. Randy is. Randy actually babysat my son when I would referee fights.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good guy,
love Randy.
Man. I've known him a couple other times, but I was at a Comic Con signing with him in Australia. Great guy. Really cool.
Solid dude.
Frank Shamrock or Ken Shamrock?
Ooh. See, I know
legends.
Them both.
Both legends.
I know them both and I love them both, man. And that's a draw. I love them both, man. I love them both.
Cool. Now, we'll see if this fight happens or not, but Conor McGregor or Manny Pacquiao? They're tough, man. I do some studying and kind of I always tailor these for anybody I'm talking to. But
you know what? I don't think it's that tough. I think it's really a no-brainer, to be honest with you. I think Manny Pacquiao is going to go through him. And I think he's going to – Manny Pacquiao. But Conor McGregor, man, he hits hard, dude. He's a tough dude.
He's going into a difference. He's going into the other guy's ring. If Pacquiao or Mayweather went into the cage, Conor would eat him up.
Yeah. There's different levels. And Pacquiao, even older, he's at a different level than Conor. But, you know, Conor, man, that dude can hit, dude. There's a reason why he's where he's at, because that guy is, you know, Conor's a stud, dude. He'll knock you out.
He backs it up. I know it for sure. And he's confident and easy going in that ring, man. Whew. I remember watching Pacquiao one time when he was, you know, God, just right in the middle, just killing it. And it looked like he was just throwing punches, like flailing. And I watched it with a friend of mine who was a pro boxer, and we slowed it down, and he had 5 hits right on the chin, bing, 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 right on the guy's chin. And I was like, God, he was so accurate when he was on top. Oh, my gosh, so good.
So exciting and such an amazing fighter. That's the only day that Mexicans were Filipinos. Does that, you know, right? Well, all of a sudden, hey, he's one of ours. Pacquiao, yeah, he's Mexican. Yeah, he's good to go, you know, because of the way he fights. He moves forward like a Mexican fighter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
For sure. Yeah, 100%.
Are you blondes or brunettes? Or los dos?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with brunette because my old lady's brunette.
I hear you. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
When you're eating, are you a soft shell taco or hard shell taco?
I can eat, dude. I'll eat them both.
Yeah, right. Depends what mood you're in.
Yeah, dude, I'm down for both. I love to eat anything. I'm down.
Enchiladas or chili rellenas?
Enchiladas, 100%.
Enchiladas. Anybody listening that doesn't know what that is enchiladas, of course, probably know what that is, but chili rellenos is like the when you get that big poblano chili and they stuff it with cheese and spices and stuff and cook it, and it's, man, it's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Stallone or Arnold?
Stallone. Stallone, yeah. Sly's awesome, yeah. Man. Sly's, yeah, he's legit, man. Yeah.
Were you an old school guy or were you a Dumb and Dumber guy? Movies.
Old school, bro. Oh, nice. Dude. Yeah, I love it, man. Right? We're going streaking, man, through the gymnasium. Oh, yeah. Dude.
Every time those movies come on, I just can't turn them. I just watch them.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, yeah. You're my boy, Blue. Oh,
yeah, you're my boy, Blue. 63 Impala or 64 Impala?
Hmm. 64 is obviously the classic per se, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the standard of Impalas. There's not much of a difference between the two, but I would, that's a tough one, man. Cause they're both amazing.
You know, both awesome.
I actually like the
maybe I should have asked 59 Impala or 64 Impala. You know, that's when you start getting 59 with the big cat eyes, you know, the old school style.
Yeah, it's the Batmobile. I would go with the 59. Right.
Yeah, right. Okay, maybe I'll alter that question.
Because 63 and the 64 are very similar, even the 65.
Similar. The 63 is a little bit – the 64 is a little more boxy. 63 is just a little bit more round. I'm a 63, impartial because I have a 63, but, you know, either one's great. I see how people collect all these cars because the 59s are just, I love those so much with those big cat eyes, the big wing tips.
The big wings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah. That's, you know what I mean? It's an Impala, dude. That's a badass. You own an Impala, dude. You're a badass, dude. That's the shit. That's so sick.
Last one. Are you a Snoop Dogg or Dr. Dre?
Dr. Dre.
Dr. Dre right there. The Chronic. Nice. I love it.
Dr. Dre, for sure, man. Yeah, NWA. Put it down.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Mike, dude, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and talking to me and keeping me occupied in this quarantine, man. I totally appreciate it, man. It was so good catching up with you. I enjoy our talks when we get on the phone and kind of just wrap up a little bit, man. You're a great guy, cool guy. Totally appreciate it, man. Really, really, really do. Thanks for taking time out of your day. Where can anybody find you? What you know, on social media and stuff?
You know what? I'm on Instagram and Referee Mike Beltran, Twitter, Ref Mike Beltran, and Facebook, you know. But I'm usually on Instagram for the most part. But,
sure.
That's where I'm most active.
Got the Mayans coming back up, season 3. That's pretty awesome. Look for Mike anytime you see MMA and you see the referee with the big old mustache. That's the Mexican German.
That's it, man. Yeah, that's it. It's braided and it smells good right now. I just cleaned it.
No, for sure, man. Hey, man, again, thanks for taking time out of your day. Enjoy the rest of your day. You know, to your family, my blessing. And viva la raza, brother.